Good evening, December 11th, 2008, James McCanny, Science Hour, going right into the show tonight. Tonight I want to cover some additional topics to a lecture I gave a few weeks ago. Thanksgiving evening, 2 weeks ago, I talked about the 12 topics that were essential to control knowledge and to keep that knowledge from the public. And tonight, what I'd like to do is add a little bit of information to that and then reiterate many of those points, because this is so important, because this is exactly what is going on today in this world and in the United States especially, but all over the world. Every country is getting the same business or the same treatment. And tonight's topic, I want to begin by saying, how would you create a slave nation, or if you termed it as a college course, creating a slave nation 101. And what exactly would you do? Well, today you see that I want to talk a little bit about the Great Depression, because in the past 8 years, we have moved from a modern society back to about the 1950s. And the next 8 years, what they're going to do is move this country and the world back to the 1930s, to the Great Depression, and it's already starting. You already see the new pres-elect, Obama, talking about work programs. Work programs. Gee, you're going to have a job, a government-paid job. I wouldn't call that a job. I would call it slavery, just like Pharaoh. What happens if you're on one of these government work project jobs and they just decide to stop paying you? You're kind of enslaved. I guess they're not going to let you go anyplace, because you probably will have to make a commitment. Yeah, and they don't have to uphold their end, remember. That can slip and slide and change. So at any rate, the point is, there are other aspects to controlling a nation, and one of the main ones that I didn't talk about on Thanksgiving was textbooks and public schools. Even if your children are homeschooled, they require that you learn the core topics that are taught in the public schools. History, you know, all of these other topics, to make sure that your kids get the same whitewashed education as is produced in public schools. The Great Depression generation was totally controlled. Those people came out of there, and many times you would hear the expression, you couldn't buy a job. And that's exactly the way it was back then. You could not buy a job. You couldn't. And then out of that generation, it took another 20 years, a full generation, and another world war, etc., up to about the mid-1950s, when the stock market actually regained the value it had just prior to the Great Depression. And so you see exactly the same process occurring today as occurred back then. The deflation, the loss of home values, the gutting of the stock market, where people considered something of value when in reality it has no value at all. But the point is, what happened in the last 8 years was a planned, controlled process of piling so much debt on this country that it could never get out, establishing the concept of terrorism and phony boogeymen, invisible boogeymen that we always have to fight, the eternal war on terrorism that is now spread worldwide, and then the idea that these fiascos occur around the world, of course orchestrated by our very own CIA, and then the United States government responding to these. Oh, we have to take action. We have to move troops here. We have to solicit the young people of this country to go, etc., and fight to preserve our freedom. They're fighting for our freedom, you know. But not to mention that who caused the problem in the first place. At any rate, Now, when I talked about a couple weeks ago, the 12 points of controlling knowledge, all of this has to filter down to the kids, the next generation. They want the next generation of kids to understand what it's like to live through a depression and to work on a government work program. Remember that they took kids out of the houses back then, took them up to the northern woods, the CC camps, the Civilian Conservation Corps, the CCC camps. They took kids up there and made them work, building paths and working in the woods, planting trees, etc., that, by the way, were cut down by the big corporations, and they didn't replant them. They got the little slavery kids to plant them in their path after the first great cutting of the North and the Northwest woods and forests. So, yeah, that was pretty convenient, a government work project where you'd pay a kid $5 a month, and a couple of those dollars would go home to mom to support her. Gee, that was a swell deal that the government did for you back then. And they're about to do it again. Obama is talking about youth corps. Gee, this sounds very 1930-ish, and it's about to spring on you. And by the way, I keep telling people that you have to become prepared to take care of yourself. How many still go to the grocery store regularly? How many of you only have enough food to last the week and wouldn't know what to do after that? How many of you who have prepared and gotten yourselves prepared know a bunch of people that are going to go and start camping out on your front door when the roof caves in, so to speak, you know? So the point is, if you want to control a generation, look back at the Great Depression, what they did to control that generation. The exact same thing is happening now, but it all has to filter down to the textbooks. Textbooks that educate our youth. So who puts the information in the textbooks? Well, that's interesting, because the top of the pile there is science. Science and, by the way, NASA and NASA theories, because this drastically affects how they teach history. They can't teach about the Great Flood because, according to NASA, it never happened. It's a myth. So all of the textbooks do not teach the most important historical event in the history of modern man, that a number of thousands of years ago, a great comet moved through this solar system, devastated Earth and some of the other planets, including Mars, lifted its atmosphere off. And gee, NASA's out there just digging around looking for water. Maybe it just sank right into the ground. That's what they're saying, because there's evidence of oceans everywhere up there. But the point is that who controls the information that goes into textbooks? So it's top-down kind of astronomy science. And they pretend like they're the authoritative, like astronomy is kind of like solid, like physics. They associate themselves with physics when that's a very bad association. Most astronomers are not very well trained in physics. They are trained more in astronomical topics. So the point I want to make here, however, is that all of this filters down through the newspapers, through the magazines, the popular magazines that deal with science or mechanics or just popular magazines that hit the street. The newspapers, the evening news, meteorology, that's something everybody watches every day, is the weather pretty much, etc., etc. And this all filters down to the textbooks. And many states have a law that prevents incorrect information from being put in textbooks. Well, gee, who determines what is correct information and what is not correct information? Well, like Texas, they have teams of scientists. Oh, they even have Nobel laureates on these teams to put the stamp of approval on the science that is being taught. Now, understand there are subjects like physics, core subjects like physics, chemistry, biology, and mathematics, which are very sound. And so I want kids to understand that these are well-documented topics. The problem is when you get into the theoretical concepts of outer space and what has happened in the past. The point of this show, of course, is to try and focus on both the correct concepts of physics and the electrical nature of the universe, and also the correct historical perspective that says that, yes, this planet was ravaged within recent history, and I don't put a date on that, but a number of thousands of years ago, B.C., the Earth had some major encounters with a large comet. And that is not taught in the textbooks. The Great Flood is taught, as it's not even taught, it's just considered a myth. If anybody brings it up, they laugh at it. The Constitution of the United States is totally estranged from the textbooks. Why was this country broken? Why did it break away from England and the European bankers? What happened back then? What was the exact process that took this country into a totally different, the Constitution, Bill of Rights? England doesn't have a Bill of Rights. The United States did. It was about people, about their rights, etc. So now I want to, with the concept of textbooks and all of this filtering down to the kids, I want to go back to those 12 points dealing with the control of knowledge, the control of knowledge relative to the public. On to the main science topic. And I want to start out with the concept of knowledge. There's a picture that I've seen. It's a round kind of a emblem. You know how people will wear an emblem on their sleeve if they belong to a club or an organization. There's always a round emblem that you have on your coat, jackets, arms, on the sleeve part, or whatever. And there's one that has the picture of the Egyptian pyramids, the Great Pyramid of Egypt. And on the top, it has the all-seeing eye, just like on the back of the Federal Reserve notes, that the pretend money that is used in the United States. And below it, in this symbol that goes on somebody's coat jacket, and this, I'm told, is a symbol for the Illuminati, the what we call the Uber rulers. But anyway, the statement is in Latin. There's a statement, but translated to English, it basically translates to the following. Knowledge is power. Very interesting. Somebody out there understands that knowledge is power. And the is there is equivalent to an equal sign, so to speak. So knowledge is equal to power. So now there's a logical conclusion to this, kind of unwritten, unspoken, but certainly there, that if knowledge is power, and if you wish to rule and control and keep your power, and most importantly, you want to keep the masses from having any power, then you must prevent on all fronts, not just a little bit, but on all fronts, you must prevent any real knowledge from falling into the hands of the masses. So the people out there are going to soak up information. Now, information is not knowledge, remember. Information can be just misinformation, and that's exactly what happens a lot of times, in fact, 99% of the time. So if you want to control, what you would have is an overseeing agency who is in control of information. And you pretend that that information is knowledge, and it has to go out to all the universities, it has to go out to the populace, it has to go out to the newspapers, the TV shows, the TV specials, the magazines that you buy in the magazine rack, the monthly magazines or kind of news magazines for science that you can buy online or are mailed to you in the mail. And so what I'm going to do tonight is I'm going to go through the top dozen ways used to control knowledge and information. And as I said, these are controlled information programs. It's a very sophisticated, highly controlled, highly managed information control network. And number one of the 12 points I want to make is you have to have a top tier. And by the way, as I said, I've talked about this. I talk about tier 1, 2, 3 science in my books, etc. I've talked about disinformation. I had a 4-part special a couple years ago around Christmas time dealing with misinformation. And that was a very extensive set of radio shows that I did on this radio show. But what I want to do tonight is give the top dozen ways to control knowledge. And I think you're going to see that in your daily life, every day you see these exact same 12 points being used. It's constant. The public is continually barraged and with diversions and misinformation on the main topics that you might be interested in. And as I said before, that's why a lot of people listen to this radio show, because they know that they're getting misinformation someplace, and they're starting to tune in to the fact that I'm on top of what's going on, not only in recognizing misinformation, but in providing you with real information. And by the way, every day, in being in my position where people are emailing me and trying to get information, they heard this someplace, is this real information, is there any truth to this? Every day I see people with rambling non-science, the statements that the world is going to end, or we're going to have vast earthquakes here, or there's going to be an epic where we're going to cross the plane of the galaxy. It just goes on and on, the 2012 thing. It just is never ending. And one of the great methods of disinformation is to flood the public with so much goofy information that they can't pick out the real information from the flood, the sea, the tsunami of bad, goofy information that's out there. That's just one of the techniques. But anyway, and then I see people emailing and forwarding this and going, oh, I read this or I heard this, and the world is going to end tomorrow, and we're going to all have that, you know, and it just goes, it's never ending. So you, the public out there, are just barraged with this, sometimes by well-intentioned people, but many times by people who just don't know what they're talking about. That you always hear about, oh, there was a scientist in Russia who said this. People don't even know who these people are. They're no names. They're people who you can't even identify who they are, but, oh, a scientist in Russia said this. And that just goes on and on. I happen to have worked with real Russian scientists, and I know that they're very down-to-earth people, and they have a very good handle on how the universe works. But part of the disinformation is flooding the market, so to speak, with phony people from Russia or something. You know, so anyway, I just want to kind of begin this talk with the idea that you are flooded with misinformation. But anyway, once again, back to the top dozen ways used to control knowledge. The very first is very unique. You need a top tier of secret knowledge that is not passed to the masses. And there have to be major topics that are the number one topics. You do not want the public to know about that. For example, is there extraterrestrial life? Well, you want to have SETI, you want to have iSETI, you want to have all these organizations that are out there looking for aliens or extraterrestrials, but most of them are disinformation sources. Most of them are controlled by people whose main goal it is to continually flood you with, for example, hope that the governments will release their information. And this goes on and on for decades and decades, and nothing ever happens. But the whole purpose of this is to keep the public at bay, to identify the people who might be privy to some knowledge about people in other parts of the universe, beings, etc. Another one, Planet X, the thought that objects can come into this solar system from somewhere else and affect our planet There's huge disinformation campaigns involving this. There are huge disinformation campaigns involving the space program. This goes on and on, but the whole purpose here of having a tier one group of scientists, of people that feed up to the Uber controllers, is that you have a very limited group of people who really understand what's going on, but most of them are compartmentalized. One guy works on this little piece over here and is never allowed to talk to this guy over here who works on another piece, and all of this information always feeds up the ladder to the Uber rulers. They're the ones who have built cave cities for themselves. They use the vast resources of national security to protect themselves, and on and on. And as I said at the beginning of the show, all of the people that you see, the Obamas, the McCains, the Clintons, even the Bushes, are front people. These are people who are out in the public. You never, ever see or hear from the real people running the show. You never hear their names. You don't know their relationships. But all of these people are kind of, that you do see, are kind of in one big family, and they, no matter who you vote for president, McCain or Obama or the Clintons or whoever gets in, they're all one big happy family once the election is over. And I can't believe how many Americans are fooled by this ridiculous political scheme called the two-party system, which is just a way of assuring that one of the candidates will get in there and everything that happens will be exactly as if the other one did. You might have a different war. You might have different bailouts. You might get somebody else getting some money, but essentially they're the same. Okay, so anyway, on top of this is a group of people who run things, and the main thing they need is misinformation going out to the public. They need these mini controversy, McCain versus Obama, to keep the public all riled up and to get them, to make them, give them the illusion that somehow they have something to do with anything. Okay, so now I'm going to start going through the other 11. This is not about politics, by the way. This is about information flow to the public. And number one, the tier one secret groups that really do have somewhat of a handle, and those groups follow my work very closely. The reason they do is because of my discoveries relative to comets. When I came along and discovered the real nature of comets, the electrical nature of the solar system, I was publishing in astrophysics journals, and it became immediately apparent that they did not want the public getting any piece of this information. And so that's been a lot of the struggle that I've had over the years. And so finally I just went to the radio show and this format, and it allows me to say what I have to say and present my material without having to depend on the so-called peer-reviewed journals, which are really tier two levels of science. Okay, so let me go through the other 11 aspects of what we might call information control. You have to have all of the agencies, the news agencies, and government agencies controlled. For example, the Cox News Agency in Atlanta controls literally all the news that flows to the AP wire, to the general public. Many times a story will be planted in there, and then it goes everywhere. It's on every front page. It's on every back page. It's on every CNN or MSNBC on the Internet, Reuters, every place. This story will be because somebody decided that today we have to influence public thinking in this direction. And so it's just flooded. The news media, you could not exist in this society without hearing the news story that they put out. Science agencies like NASA, for example, has two main distribution centers for information through which everything flows. JPL and Goddard are the two main information filtering sources for NASA. All branches of the military, the National Security Agency, NSA, the CIA, the National Science Foundation, NASA, all have official screening output agencies where everything is filtered. I know the people in the military, when I go to scientific meetings, all of the information that they put out has to first pass a filtering agency where their information is filtered. Then it can be put into a form that can even go to the scientific meetings where there's just scientists basically from around the world, sometimes as many as 15,000 scientists at these meetings. But all of them, before they got there, whether they're from a university, whether they're from a government agency, all had a filtering element to the information they're allowed to put out. So filtering and control of news agencies is ultimately important. That's number two on my list. And as I said, from number 2 to 12 are all what I would consider tier 2 or tier 3 science and science information flow. The third thing on my list is to compartmentalize knowledge. So even the very best educated do not see the total picture. For example, scientists and engineers. They are given their one little task. They say, this is your specialty. This is what your PhD is in, and so therefore this is what you will work in for the rest of your life. And I've had scientists come out of the tier one groups, and they talk to me, and they say, you know, you're the only person that I know that covers, they're talking to me about my work, they tell me that I'm the only one that they know that is covering the broad range of scientific topics, giving a complete explanation for how the solar system works and how the electrical conditions come into play at very certain subtle times. And everybody else that they know is compartmentalized. They have one very narrow topic that they deal with, and typically for the majority, if not their entire career. Okay, the next 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8, I'm going to read off in one fell swoop here. Money, grants, and funding. That's number 4. Number 5, prestige, awards, all of the things, the glory that goes with following the system. Number 6, and this one is the one I always say is the easiest, the cheapest to use, and the most effective in general, is ego. Oh, can you control people by tweaking their ego? It's cheap, it doesn't cost you anything, and is it easy to do? You just see these little scientists marching around, and they got their little briefcase, and they are so important. My goodness. And you know what? It doesn't cost a dime. It's the easiest way, and the CIA and the security agencies know for a fact that over the millennia, over the centuries, over the decades, the easiest way to control somebody is by maneuvering their ego. Give them a badge, give them responsibility, give them a prize, give them put a security level 1 stamp on what they know. Oh, are they important? How about professional peer pressure? This is huge. This is number 7 on my list. That a lot of people, a lot of scientists listening to this show, for example, totally agree with me, totally understand everything I'm doing. I wouldn't say necessarily understand, but they are very tuned in to what I'm doing. And they study what I'm doing, and this all makes sense to them, but when they go back to their professional desk, they do what they're told. They comply with all of the professional standards, so to speak, for space science, astrophysics, etc. And they know that if they step out of line, they will be singled out and isolated. Pretty soon they may not get grant money to travel, they may not get information that they need. They will just be kind of squeezed out to the side until all of a sudden they're just standing there by themselves with nothing to do. Number 8, public publications in scientific journals. Publish or perish is the term that they use. And of course, anybody in science has to publish, or they soon become kind of, as I said, squeezed out to the side and not visible. And the only way you're going to publish is if you agree with the general system. And this goes on and on, so when new PhDs come in, they are taught a very certain rigorous standard. They become very busy, and most of the young PhDs that I know are just up to their eyeballs and farther in work, working for their professor, working for their first postdoc or first job as a physicist in some agency, and they can't see the light of day. So keeping them busy, keeping them with very stringent schedules, a very heavy workload, keeps them kind of like the horse pulling the plow. Just never knew that it was fun to get out and run one day in the field, in the meadow, because all he does is pull that plow. And so that's the same way in the science world. So let me read through number 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8 again. Money grants funding. That's number 4. Number 5, prestige, awards, you know, recognition amongst your peers. 6, ego. Stroking that ego, making people feel important, giving them a badge, a little title, allowed to edit some book that's coming out as a result of some conference, and they get their name on that. Number 7, professional peer status and professional peer pressure. Coming in from the rest of the community, from the funding on down. And number 8, publications, publish or perish in the respected journals. Now let me go through some of the so-called refereed respected journals. Top ones, of course, are Nature and Science. And what's funny is if you're in the inner circle of NASA or any of these groups, your material is almost automatically published in Nature and Science without anybody reviewing it at all. But they claim to be refereed science journals. As long as it complies with the standard that the solar system formed 4.5 billion years ago and that comets are dirty snowballs, that there's no electrical condition in outer space, and that magnetic fields exist independently of anything else, and on, I could go on and on with that list, but these journals will publish them. Also, people publishing books through the scientific process, these go through peer-reviewed outlets and then become published as books and then advertised in the standard scientific journal. Here's one that I just came up with. Now, part of what's going on, and I talked about this last week on my show, I talked about the efforts being placed on putting any of the ancient catastrophes in the history of man, putting them into some kind of explainable context where the Earth just did this by themselves. There's a new book out, and I won't give it any publicity by saying what it is, but it deals with archaeology. And it states that all the devastating effects of man throughout history, going way back into prehistory, were just caused by earthquakes. They were just localized earthquakes. That's what killed the people. They died because of this earthquake. And that's the end of the story. And then the book is praised by one of the editors. And by the way, these people exist in universities, some of the bigger universities around the country. And this is a book, you know, very glossy, covered, hardbound book, which is very expensive to publish, etc. And, you know, a lot of effort went into making this book into what you might call a standard explanation. Now other people can reference this book and say, see, this is the standard explanation. Standard science does explain all the catastrophes of man. But the one problem is 99% of the public out there knows there's something wrong here. And what I try and talk about on this show and the series of shows that I've given show that For example, gravitational effects from a large passing celestial object are required to even make mountains, to create the conditions in Earth where Earth is relaxing thousands of years later, and that's why we have the amount of volcanic activity we have in the earthquakes, etc. Because if Earth had formed 4.5 billion years ago and nothing had come by, we wouldn't have oceans, we wouldn't have an atmosphere, we wouldn't have oil sitting on top of the ground, we wouldn't have the ancients telling us of the rain of naphtha and fire coming in from the heavens, we wouldn't have had the Great Flood, we would not have had all of the, for example, the Mesoamerican legends of the Quetzalcoatl taking the ocean on his back and washing it across the land, Quetzalcoatl being the plumed serpent god of the night sky or a great comet. And we would not have any of this. So these books that come out of standard science, it's an effort to try and replace real stories with some kind of a very poorly developed set of explanations. And I know that the public out there really doesn't buy this. So this is a term that we use kind of in the industry. It's called preaching to the choir. Now, all of these scientists belong to a large organization and organizations, and they're preaching to the choir, so to speak. Excuse me, I had to get a drink of water here. Preaching to the choir. And so that's this point 8, or point 7, professional peer pressure, where all of the scientists agree on these kind of that nothing has happened to Earth. And this is a theme, I would say, this is one of the overriding themes in the controlled knowledge in Tier 2 science. Don't tell the public that anything bad happened from outer space in our current era. And, of course, that's what Velikovsky was trying to point out in his work when he was dealing with calendars, that all of the ancient civilizations are very clear that big things came through the solar system, they looked and acted like comets, and they were very devastating to Mars, the other planets, there were electrical effects, and there were gravitational effects, and they very much affected our planet Earth, sending it back into the cave ages. And this is not the result of a couple little localized earthquakes here and there. Something big happened. But in the standard science world, I would say an overriding theme is Earth developed 4.5 billion years ago. Nothing's happened since. All of the catastrophes that you see are due to Earth just jumping up and doing this by itself, and okay, that explains everything, now we're happy, now we can go away and not worry about that anymore. But the public, it's kind of like a deer in the forest who is afraid of man. Even a young fawn who has never seen a man before somehow instinctively knows there's something to be feared about man, and for good reason, because man hunts deers and shoots them. And has throughout history. So the deer are just instinctively afraid of man. Thus, and similarly, the public is afraid of comets. There's something in the public psyche that tells them when they see a comet that that means danger, and there's nothing that the astronomy community tries to work on harder than saying that don't worry about those, they're just these little dirty snowballs, they couldn't hurt a flea. We've flown through the tail of Halley's Comet in 1910 and everybody didn't die, therefore comets are harmless little poof balls that cannot harm a flea. And that's just not the case. You can't take one example of 1910 because Halley's Comet is a very little comet. It's only 7 kilometers long or something like that, looks like a little potato. But it's sure amazing to see NASA going out, taking pictures of a comet nucleus, pure black, covered with tar, hot, very hot, too hot to have any water on it, and come out saying, it's a snowball. It's that hot black ice out there that NASA just loves to keep calling a snowball. So that's what you can see, the denial, the denial that goes into standard science. That's very important. Diversion and denial are the two big D's. Diversion meaning information that's basically incorrect, and then just denial that what the information they're putting together, sure, it's consistent, but it doesn't explain. Now, if you take this book on archaeology that I just talked about, showing this was written by geologists, and stating that earthquakes have caused all these major disasters, well, sure, there were earthquakes, but what caused the earthquakes? A lot more was going on, and when you see the mastodons up in Siberia, tropical, semi-tropical animals frozen with semi-tropical plants in their throats in the Siberian tundra, you know that something big happened. But they just kind of ignore those details. And that's what very much irritated the scientific community when Velikovsky came along. Velikovsky pointed out all of the things that they didn't want to deal with. So now you get a book that comes along, explains that everything here was caused by localized earthquakes, and now, gee, that's great. We explained it. People can reference that book, and life goes back to normal. Now, one point I made, I actually posted this on my webpage this past week, and I'll read it on this show because not everybody gets to see the webpage. Here's a posting that I put up on November 24th, a couple days ago. And this is really true. I said, the current indicators show that standard Tier 2 and Tier 3 science in quotes, is on a dedicated course to try to justify their outdated and absurd theories of the solar system and planet Earth, including the subjects of archaeology, geology, atmospheric science, meteorology, astronomy, space science and astrophysics, evolutionary biology, and this feeds into the history of the world and the history of man. And the history of man is really one of our most important topics. Where did we come from? Where are we going? What's our future? And how do we relate our future to the past? Not to mention the archaic belief that inertial rockets, like the rockets they use in the space program, not to mention the archaic belief that inertial rockets will get us to the great final frontier, outer space. For decades in the past, standard science has had a very standard package of information. Much of it as a result of Velikovsky. They were trying to offset Velikovsky's success, so they developed a bunch of stories regarding science, the dirty snowball comet model, the planets being formed 4.5 billion years ago, and the point is that these groups have solidified the future also of science information reporting. And this book that I was just talking about is just an example stating that these scientific groups have dedicated into the future as far as we can see, still depending on rockets, inertial rockets, to get us into space on a 20-year space program. Archaeology, geology, all of these subjects that I read, the titles of these subjects, are all dedicated to keeping the same archaic, outdated theories and concepts moving to you, the public, through information channels that go out to you. So all you're going to see for the next 20 to 30 years is the same total misinformation, misguided information that you've seen for the past 30 years. And that's why it's important that the public has to realize this and move away on their own. And this is going to be very difficult because you are being absolutely bombarded Now I'm going to continue with points 9, 10, 11, and 12, and you're going to see that the information control or the prevention of knowledge being passed to the public is paramount to controlling the public and keeping you dumbed down for the next 30 years. So the path has already been set. Let's see what else. And now here's where you're going to see that every day you are bombarded by this standard package of information. Number 9, this information filters down to science news reporting, science journalists and editors and news, what we call news repeaters. These are the people that report, say, in Sky and Telescope or Astronomy Magazine, many others out there, Discovery Magazine or Discover Magazine, Popular Mechanics, Popular Science. All of these tend to have this really, the type of thing that really is not going to help, man. It's a lot of gee whiz things going on, but not the core issues. It's not attacking the core issues or changing the story. So if you look at one of these magazines 10 or 15 years ago, you're still going to be talking about the Big Bang or the solar system forming billions of years ago, or earthquakes, or some other story about what the history of man. The point number 10, there are disinformation campaigns. Hundreds of disinformation techniques are being used in these. One of them is phony plants and imposters. And this is using people's egos too. There are a lot of people who are fading out. Let me give a specific example. Back in the 80s, there was a group called INSLA, which developed some software called Promise. It was given to the government, basically. And there were some lawsuits revolving around that. But basically, it was developed to provide a knowledge-based system for government agencies that was self-consistent, and there were a lot of programmers that came out of that industry. A lot of them now are involved in the disinformation campaigns, and some of them we see coming back out again. In fact, it looks like the CEO of that company is now coming back out to try and make a new face for himself with, let's just say, the cover stories that somehow they're going to help us go into space or understand UFO information, etc. But there are dozens and dozens and dozens of phony plants and imposters out there on the internet mainly, and there is control of radio shows, websites, TV specials like Nova, History Channel, Discovery Channel. All of those shows all have a central theme. And now it's interesting, since the public seems to want catastrophe information, they create a story, a total disinformation story, but it's called 2012. Everybody and their brother is now trying to sell a book or a video or a disaster, or going on the radio, or has a web page stating that 2012, the whole universe is going to collapse in 2012. Well, that was a date that was picked, much like the May 15, 2003 phony date for Planet X coming. These are disinformation campaigns that are propagated to keep, and as I said, if they flood the market with misinformation, then it's going to be very hard for people to pick out real information, because then people will pick up the misinformation, email it to friends, and it just gets passed around. It'll be on radio shows, et cetera, et cetera. So there's dozens and dozens of these misinformation campaigns which will flood your everyday books, newspapers, magazine articles. It's going to show up everywhere. And that's what my weekly radio show tries to do. It tries to expose and fight this and give you real information. That's what this series of shows is all about. Number 11 on my list is to be able to listen to people and hear what they're talking about, either on their cell phones, in their houses, with plants, in the TVs. And I mentioned this, I think, last week or the week before, that by February 17th, 2009, all houses have to have HD high-definition TV, either a unit that goes on top of your old TV or a high-definition TV. There's other things like the radio read, water meters, all kinds of little plant devices in your house capable of reading what you're talking about. They want ultimate total control to listen to everybody and what they're talking about. This is so they can isolate dissenters and get rid of them in a kind of a Nazi-like program. So this is number 11 on my list of controlling knowledge to people. If there's anybody out there that does start to get a clue of what's going on, they're going to be able to identify you, single you out, and if you become a problem, try and, let's say, make your life a little difficult. How about the outreach programs that are funded by NASA, where they hire Tier 3 textbook repeaters, we call them, that go out, infiltrate grade schools and high schools with the official doctrine of NASA. And, gee, they might have a PhD, so it looks pretty impressive to a grade schooler. High school kid, and that NASA has sent them there, and they wear nice clothes, and they come in, and they have an inside track into science classes in the public high schools and grade schools, etc. These are called outreach programs, and they have an entire staff of, as I said, Tier 3 people. We call them textbook repeaters, but they're perfect to go out and repeat the NASA standard line to sell it to your kids. And number 12, this is interesting because the James Jones special aired last week. They do not want to allow any group, small or large, to leave the controlled society. If a group like this succeeded, others will flock to it. So that's the one number one thing, even though I have a 12 on my list. Probably one of the biggest things they want to do is listen and monitor people, and any group, small, large, whatever, 10 people, 20 people, 37 people, 900 people, whatever, the ultimate thing is they do not want any group to leave society, the controlled society, and break away and succeed. And that's why you see, for example, these were touted as mass suicides, but it turns out that the Jamestown effort, even though you may not agree with all of their philosophies and that type of thing, it was actually becoming quite successful. You look at Waco, the same thing. You look at the Heaven's Gate, the same thing. You look at the church, the Mormon church in Texas this past year that was raided. The kids taken away and given shots, and basically they finally had to give the kids back because they couldn't prove anything. There were, of course, accusations of misconduct with children, that type of thing. And they found out that the woman who called in the complaint, they couldn't even find who she was, and the one they believed it was somebody who had been making these calls. And guess what? Worked for the CIA. Well, that's what they don't want. They don't want a group to leave society, become successful and autonomous, to be able to live on their own without the banks, without the phony money, without all of the other phony things that they force on you in society. So controlling knowledge is very important because if groups or small groups of people become successful, then guess what? They'll start to learn, they'll understand, they'll break away, and they'll realize they don't have to have the phony money. They don't have to be part of the phony war setup that's going on around the world. The whole political situation And so this all comes back to the one ultimate control of knowledge. As I started out, I'll read it again. I said the symbol that they apparently the Illuminati, or whatever you want to call them, the Uber leaders, as we call them, the Uber rulers, they have a symbol, the pyramid, the Great Pyramid of Egypt, just like on the dollar, U.S. Federal Reserve note, which is not the dollar, by the way, it is phony money. But that pyramid with the all-seeing eye on it, and then the statement in Latin that knowledge is power. And let me read my opening statement once again, that if knowledge is power, and if you, as an Uber ruler, Uber leader, Illuminati, whatever you want to call them, if you wish to control and rule and keep your power, and most importantly, want to keep the masses from having any power, then you must prevent on all fronts any real knowledge from falling into the hands of the masses. And I just want to also make a statement here, just to clarify at this time, that I have learned a long time ago that I work by myself. And you can read that on my webpage. I work by myself. I do my own work. I fund my own research. I don't depend on other people, and I don't have groups. The best thing that the people that really don't like me, probably one of the best things they would like to see is for me to form a group, because then it would become some kind of a thing that they could infiltrate and damage me with that. And the thing is, I am working on the personal projects I'm working on are so far out in front. For example, my Calculate Primes project dealing with the encryption codes, breaking the RSA encryption codes, which is another entire topic. The other work I'm doing right now is so far out ahead of what anybody else is imagining out there in the standard science world that I really don't want to work with other people. Other people are just beginning to learn many times what I did 4 or 5 years ago. So why would I want to form a group? And I certainly don't need it for social reasons, but I want to make that statement clear that I don't have groups. I'm not associated with other groups. I work by myself. I always have worked by myself. I'm an independent scientist. When I go to scientific meetings, that's what my name tag reads. It's James McCanney, independent scientist. And people out there, some of them don't like me, but they respect me because I'm doing something that they would all love to do, be independent of their masters. And they all realize that everything I'm saying here about being compartmentalized or being in denial and being subject to the money, grant, funding, prestige, ego, professional peer pressure, publication or publish or perish syndrome, that they are all subject to that and they're locked into it because they get a paycheck. So at any rate, this show has been about the control of knowledge and how it is done out there in the real world, how information is kept bottled up for a few people, and how there's a direct effort to provide you with all kinds of false information, to flood the airwaves with garbage, to replace real knowledge with phony knowledge. And for those people that do have an appetite for real information, provide them with something totally phony that consumes their time and efforts. This is Jim McCanney. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.